You know, one of the best ways they say now to decrease stress and blood pressure and elevate the feel-good hormones is with the help of a dog or cat. Yeah, that's what they're saying. You need a pet. You got health issues? You know, you got to get a pet. So I want to go to someone who knows a little bit about that this morning. And she just happens to be the author of Dog as My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse. It's an animal lover's guide to a healthy, happy, and extraordinary life. She is Carlene Montez de Oca. Good morning, Carlene.
Good morning, David.
So glad to have you with us and David and friends. And let's talk a little bit about this because you are saying basically that sometimes pets can be better than pills.
I believe so, definitely. There are some of the benefits that you've just mentioned are just a few of them, so few. And, you know, as you said, they help decrease cholesterol. They help decrease our blood pressure. So they help with heart disease, which unfortunately one in four of us will suffer from that in our lifetime. And unfortunately, it is kind of a big death risk. And, you know, they help you get out. So you get, you know, exercise, which is important for helping with heart disease. They help you get some sunshine while you're out, you know, which is great for vitamin D. And of course, they help you in terms of emotionally de-stress and feel less anxious and less depressed.
Well, you know, I have a cat. His name is Mo. Everyone here that listens to the show knows all about Mo. And so Mo was a rescue from the borough police station because someone put him in a little box and put him down there. And I wasn't planning on getting another cat. I had had three in my lifetime. And after the last one lived 20 years and before she passed away, I just said, I don't think I'm going to get another cat. Well, Mo adopted me. And so now Mo's there. And, you know, he has his own unique personality. He knows where I'm going, what I'm doing. He follows. Well, actually doesn't follow me. He leads me. He goes ahead of me. And then turns around to look to see, make sure I'm coming. But he kind of has the idea where I'm going, you know, in the apartment. So he knows exactly how that all works. It's interesting because I guess if he wasn't there, there would be a piece that says, okay, there's nobody here. It's empty. But with him there, you don't sense the emptiness because he's always doing something or he's got his way. In fact, he's so nice to me. He lets me live there. You know, it's just a wonderful thing to be able to shack up with a pet. So anyway, let's talk a little bit more about this. So what happens in human beings that we're attracted to pets?
There, you know, that's an interesting thing. There's a theory called biophilia, which means that we have like a natural just affinity with nature. With nature, we have this kind of, you know, from the moment we're born, and we see this with little children, they have such a connection to animals and to nature. So I think it's like hardwired in us. And so many of us are losing kind of this external connection to nature. You know, we're on our gadgets, we're on our cell phones, on our computers, everything except being in nature and being in touch with that. And so animals, I think, are oftentimes kind of the stepping stone to nature. They're nature in our house, our cats and our dogs. You know, they connect us still to the natural world, which is a very powerful thing for our health and our well-being.
Now, we talk emotionally, but, you know, a lot of times people physically have an issue with a pet in the home because of the fact that, you know, they're allergic to the fur or to whatever, the dander, whatever it happens to be. So, you know, how do you handle that whenever, you know, I'm sure it's good for you emotionally, but, you know, you sneeze and you can't stand having them around you.
Yeah, that's pretty tough on people because, you know, and I hear this from a lot of people. My husband has allergies, but, you know, the cat is staying. So unfortunately, in those situations, you know, it is sad because I know that people have such a connection with animals in that way. So some people don't have really serious allergies, so they may be able to have an animal in the home and they may be able to, you know, relieve their allergies in other ways. But so it is a little hard. But the thing is that if we keep in mind that in the first year of life, having animals in the home for children, this is kind of what really helps with, you know, that boost of immunity helps with allergies and asthma and the problems that can come down later in life.
Now, yeah, I was just going to mention that because of the fact that you said that first year of life, whenever that newborn is trying to adjust to the world. And, of course, one of those things are all the allergens, whether it happens to be the grass mm-hmm. outside or even sometimes, you know, people do smoke, unfortunately, and some do in the house. And I'm not quite, I mean, I can't wrap my head around that, but, you know, I know people do. So I guess, you know, whenever you have a pet, it's more than just one more possible allergen, but rather you think that the immunity actually rises by that pet being in the house?
Interesting. There was an article recently, I think in the last couple of days in the New York Times, that asked, can pets be the new probiotics? And probiotics, of course, is that beneficial gut bacteria that helps with immunity, because they feel that, let's say, a dog will come in and bring in, you know, they're in the mud, they're in the dirt. They bring in certain things that if the body can get used to, the human body can get used to, it helps build immunity. Because otherwise, we sterilize everything so much. I mean, everybody, I'm not saying that it's not a good idea to maybe wash your fruits and vegetables when you get them, but we sterilize them. It's like we take every single thing out and we keep our household so sterile versus the way that it used to be, which was we were much more closer to nature, much more closer to the animals in the world, and therefore had better immunity.
Well, you know, people have said this to me before, and I'm not taking exception with what you're saying, but I guess my only problem with it is the fact that, you know, people also died at 50 and 60 years old back then, you know, and now we're living to be 100. So
right.
How much of this is just better medical technology versus a cleaner world?
Well, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I'm not saying it's one or the other. I'm just saying it can be a little of both.
Okay. All right. Hey, can you hold on for just a second? We got to take a break, and then we'll be right back with Carlene Montes de Oca. Today we have Carlene Montes de Oca with us. She is my friend. She's the author of Dog is My Doctor, Cat is My Nurse. And so we're just kind of going through this thing about how pets actually help us from a standpoint of medically, how we're not just happier because we have a pet for the most part, you know, unless you have to really clean up a lot with them, then sometimes you're not so happy with them. But nevertheless, it's not just that, but rather it actually physically helps us as well as emotionally. And so thank you, Carlene, for just staying with me.
Absolutely.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about this this whole thing. You know, basically, you are, you're an author, a speaker, you are an acupuncturist, and you do plant-based nutritional consulting. What is that, plant-based nutritional consulting?
Sure. Plant-based nutrition consulting is, my focus is on helping people eat more plant-based, meaning that they're adding a lot more fruits and vegetables and omitting animal proteins in their food, because we see that a lot of the animal proteins, the meat, the dairy, they add to inflammation in the body. They contribute to, you know, heart disease and various chronic ailments, which, you know, you had asked me before, the question about, well, you know, people are living longer than ever. Well, people are living longer than ever. Unfortunately, they're living in chronic states of illness longer than ever as well.
Well, you're right about that. And that's why I said, you know, I guess we look at it from a technical standpoint. And so medically, they're able to keep people alive longer. And of course, now we can go into a whole entire different realm of discussion here. But, you know, just because you live longer doesn't mean you have quality of life. And I would rather have quality of life than living a long time. So it's just, you know, that's just me. But there's some people who just don't want to die. So they'll, whatever it takes to live, that's what they'd rather do. But on the other hand, you know, I don't know if the living to 100 is such a good thing if you don't have the quality of life to go with it. I have some people I know who are 100, and up until recently, they were in very pretty good shape. But, you know, if you have that kind of quality of life, then it's not too bad, I guess.
No, and quality of life is what I feel that our animals can contribute to our well-being in that way. I mean, I just know, just based on writing this book, which took me several years to do, and hearing so many people's stories, just how invaluable our animals are in our life that just help us be healthier and happier, and that adds to the quality of our life.
You are the founder of something called the Animal Human Health Connection, which I thought was really interesting. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. That came about as I knew that the benefit that animals had, dogs and cats had on my own life in terms of emotionally helping me feel better and then physically also helping me feel better. I went through a period of anxiety and insomnia, and I really felt that my cats helped me during that time. But then I started being in private practice and started to hear other people share their stories, because I thought I was the only one kind of going through this. But suddenly I'd hear story after story after story, and then people found out I was writing the book and shared more and more stories. So I realized there was a profound connection between animals and humans and how that could benefit our health, not only physically, but emotionally, mentally, spiritually. It's like the whole gamut of health. And so that's when I came up with the Animal Human Health Connection, and I'm helping people just through my books, speaking, as well as having programs where I'm really trying to help people maximize that and not just disregard, just, you know, go beyond the companionship that your animal gives you into this whole new realm of health and well-being.
That sounds like an interesting way of approaching it. I mean, I don't think even veterinarians, as much as they, of course, advocate for the animals, but yet at the same time, I don't know that they really talk about the physical aspect of the relationship as much as they do the emotional, the fact that the animals can bring about this sense of well-being physically as well as the emotional side of it.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, we all train, you know, whatever our medical modality is, you know, we train in that. So veterinarians, medical doctors are usually focused on the physical benefits of something, right? That they focus on, you know, the broken arm or the, you know, stomach ache, headache, those kind of things. As an acupuncturist and in my holistic, you know, viewpoint, I look at the whole body. I don't just look at individual components. I look at the way the whole body is operating. And so I come from that perspective, and I have really seen, just based on my own experience and the experience shared by my patients, that animals have this benefit on the whole body. So I think that's a pretty profound thing, because if that were put into a pill, how much would you pay for that? That would be priceless.
You know, you talk a lot about the plant-based nutrition. So when it comes to actually feeding dogs and cats and that type of thing, what do you advocate in that area of pet food?
Sure. Well, for cats, I don't necessarily, I would prefer not to answer the question for cats, because I'm not an expert in nutrition for animals. And cats have a very different digestion, you know, digestive tract. You know, they are carnivores. So you know, I used to feed them meat, and so usually fish, and that's what I would give my cats. But in terms of dogs, that's an interesting question, because we are starting to see that, and there's more studies. In fact, there was, again, the New York Times had a whole article on vegan dogs recently, and I found my own experience of feeding my dogs vegan food, which was basically the way I eat in many ways. It was pretty much the same food. I saw one of my dogs reverse their kidney disease. And
really?
They're 16 years old.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty profound. And I have actually medical, I had the labs done when they had it, and I had the labs done about 7 months later, and they got better. And then about a year and a half now, it's gone. So that was a pretty profound revelation for me.
Now, what did you, explain their diet. What did you do differently?
Well, let's see. The dogs used to eat raw, like, you know, I used to give them raw food. And which had meat in it. And then I changed into more plant-based. So let's see, for breakfast, you know, this is kind of made up. I make it up and I cook it. So it would be like a variety of beans that they eat, a variety of grain in it, like millet or not millet, sorry, quinoa or brown rice or something. There'd be some vegetable matter. There'd be like peas in it. Let me think, what else? You know, there could be like some peanut butter in there, or so it's a variety of plant-based foods that are all very, you know, healthy, like sweet potato. They really like that. So it kind of comes up into like this kind of mushy stuff. And they sometimes eat, there's a kibble for people who don't have time to make it called V-Dog. And so they've been on that. But right now I have a dog who's 14 and the other one is 16. So it's been pretty, they're doing pretty well.
That's amazing. And I've heard that by other people. The interesting thing, I had Dr. Judy on, we get her on every once in a while here. She's a vet. And she tells us about, she's very much advocating some of what you're saying as well. She said to me about, you know, the carnivores for the cats and, you know, you have to, they have to have the meat and all this type of stuff. And so I went out and I researched, you know, I went on the internet, found a couple of the different manufacturers that actually make the and package it, and it's more, I don't want to say it's fresh, but it's more of just the meat itself and that type of thing. Bought it, brought it home, and I've tried it twice with Mo, and he won't eat it. He just will not eat it. He goes back to the dry cat food, and I did at least get a different kind of dry cat food to mix it in, and I've had to kind of mix it with his others to get him to go with it, but he you know, they said, I mean, she said the cat should go for, you know, the, because they want to do, they even want to do crunchy bones because that's what they would do if they, you know, got a mouse and ate it. And so I bought all that type of stuff that, you know, Mo should have liked, but Mo doesn't like that. So I don't know what to go for from there, but.
Well, one thing I know, unfortunately, my cats have passed away now, but when I had my cats and I did that transition, I went really slow. And it's the same thing I do with any, like I always suggest that people go very, very slowly when they transition from food with their animals. So with cats especially, I would almost, in his regular food, just almost put like a quarter of a teaspoon at a time. And then like they would get used to it because they would mostly taste the other food. And then the next thing would be a teaspoon. And then a few days later, it'd be a tablespoon. I would go that slowly until they transitioned in. And then it almost becomes like they don't even notice it anymore.
Well, part of the issue with that is that he, you know, he basically one cup is all he eats a day of the dry food. And he goes out and he eats the grass. I have grass for him and that type of thing.
Yes.
And so he loves that and he devours that. But the problem is when you open this wet food, it's not made to stay open all day because it spoils, and it just as if you had if you made roast beef and you let it sit out all day. I mean, by the end of the day, nobody would want to be eating that roast beef because it looks pretty crappy, and so that's part of the problem I have is just, you know, even whenever I open it. And I set it down. He smells it and walks away. He doesn't even. And I mean, I have his other food there too, but he just doesn't even try it. But the odd thing is, if I get him the nationally known pet food that's in a can, and I open that, he will eat that.
Right.
But that cat food can stay open most of the day without spoiling because it has so many preservatives in it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's why so many of us are drawn to junk food. I mean, I hate to say the stories I've heard about people leaving certain junk food out and a year later, it's still there.
So basically my cat has now resorted that he's a junk food addict too, with all the other stuff.
But I will say that, you know what, I mean, because mine, I didn't know any better at the beginning either, and they all transitioned out. But, I you know, you can always put it in the fridge, right? And it will take a while with cats. I notice that they're much more finicky, or they will take their time. But over a two-week period, if you go really slow, you may see a transition.
All right, Mo, here it comes. We're going to try it again in a different way. And I'm sure he's going to roll his eyes and just walk away from me the way he always does when he's in disgust. You know, cats can express disgust better than humans because and away they go, you know.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is you can check out with Mo, because what we used to always do is, you know, like one of my cats like broccoli. So we would give him a broccoli, like, you know, or one of them like edamames, which are like those soybean beans, you know, they'd like that. So, you know, some of them like asparagus. So you may want to try to add a little bit of that into their food and see if they enjoy that.
Good idea. Now, like I said, I buy the cat grass and I put it out on the balcony. Uh-huh. He goes out there and eats it, and he loves it. In fact, I could see a nutritional difference in him just because he's eating regularly. He's going out and eating some grass that you know, I guess is meeting whatever that need happens to be in his body. So he doesn't do hairballs either, which is really good considering how much hair he has. All right. Well, enough about Mo, and I really appreciate, Carlene, you being on with me and just talking with me about all these things, because every time I have someone on about pets, I learn a whole lot, and I've learned a whole lot today, and hopefully our our listeners have as well.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure to be here.
All right. So it's Carlene Montes de Oca, and she is the author once again of the book that says, My Dog is My Doctor, Cat is My Nurse, An Animal Lover's Guide to a Healthy, Happy, and Extraordinary Life. And where can we get the book, Carlene?
You can get the book online or, you know, through Amazon, or you could get it at your favorite bookseller as well.
All right. There you go. Hey, have a great day, Carlene. Thank you so much for being with us and being my friend.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.